the road with Jack. Glad you came back, go beyond the scar. Great Castle on the road with Jack. Glad you came back once more.
What do you say?
On the road with Jack.
Welcome back. It is The Drive with Jack. Jack Ebling here with Blue Belly Tom, Tom Crawford. That means it's time for another Tuffy Auto Service Center's Jack and Tom Tuesday.
And we're hovering towards November. It's time to take your car to Tuffy Auto Service Center, get all your vehicles checked out before the cold weather hits. For Greater Lansing locations, go out to TuffyLansing.com for more details.
Also joined by longtime University Administrator Terry Denbo.
It's wonderful, Terry.
Now that can only mean it is time for At Issue.
You better think about what you're trying to do to me. Think, let your mind go, let yourself be free. People walking around every day.
Our topic today, and this is a spinoff on the interview you just heard with Ryan Leaf, is winning and losing and knowing the difference. And I think that is maybe the more important part of that equation. And we want to welcome in a guy who knows a little bit about this and the psychology involved, and that is Dr. John H. Braccio, renowned clinical psychologist, educational consultant, Renaissance man. It is our psychologically speaking segment. And John, we want to incorporate this into At Issue. When someone can bottom out and be as delusional as Ryan Leaf was, to the point that he was stealing his players' painkillers and then go to prison for 32 months, and said that at one point he had a experience. He only left the yard, went out into the yard twice in 32 months. And one was a guy who said, my birthday, I just want you to come out and throw the football with me. And then the word got around. Next thing he knew, it was like the longest yard and all the guards were out there. And he said, I'm not going to do this. And he just really was so down on life. And then toward the end of his stay in prison, he wound up rooming with an Iraqi war veteran. And he convinced him to help other inmates learn to read. And through that procedure, he realized that he did have something to give, that he was able to come out and he did have a message to prevent people from going through the things he had experienced. John, sometimes do you have to bottom out? Do you have to hit rock bottom before you can bounce back?
I do believe that. I've actually seen that many times in my work over the years. You have to finally come to the point where there's nowhere to go but up. And I mean that sincerely. Sadly, sometimes these can end in suicide. But if the person finally hits that point, and hopefully there's somebody there that can be of helpful to you to help you move forward, then yes, there you can move forward. But sometimes people will do everything they can to maintain an ineffective, dysfunctional lifestyle. It's really amazing. But then when you see the people that come out of it, you can go back to Winston Churchill's severe depression, you know, but he certainly did okay in World War II. So, yes, I believe that that is important for many, many people. Hopefully, it doesn't have to happen as often as it does, but yes, it does.
Are you saying that everybody's got to hit bottom, John? I mean, because what if you're like a quarter of the way down? Can't you turn it around there?
Yes, there are people that can. The question is, are there some people that have to hit absolute bottom? And there are some people that are so resistant to change or will not do it or feel in their whatever the dream or desire or what they're demanding of life, they won't change. And then when they finally hit that point, there's nowhere else to go. And, yeah, I don't mean everybody. Certainly everybody runs into setbacks. Everybody runs into defeat. Everybody runs into moments that they wish they didn't even want to remember after they're done, let alone living in them. So, but, yeah, it depends on where you are in life. And, Tom, no one is ever 100% on top all the time. That's just not the way Earth is set up.
That's for certain.
John, Terry, how are you?
Very good, Terry. Always nice talking to you, my friend.
How does this all relate to criteria for success, whether it is self-image or society's pressure or, you know, metrics for success that are unreachable or unattainable?
Well, I believe in life we have to compare ourselves with ourselves. Okay, that becomes step one. Then I think when we set goals and we move forward, we certainly want to go by what society has in it to offer to us, okay? And then we look at what things are important to ourselves, what do we want to attain, what are our dreams, whatever they might be. Some people are very happy living a successful life, living in Lansing, just living here, living a day-to-day life, working in government, whatever it might be. Others have dreams way beyond that. They want to be going off to Harvard. They want to go to Stanford. They want to travel the world. They want to have an impact that they see on a bigger level. I think it totally depends on the person's goals and their abilities and matching into what at that time society offers to you. If you're looking at what you can't have, like let's say I wanted to be the Prince of Great Britain, well, that's something that, at least for now, as they change the rules, I can't be. So I have to go by what is really reasonable, what can I do, and try to do the very best I can to attain those goals.
John, when you talk about the need to bottom out, is it safe to say that the Michigan football team has not bottomed out yet, despite what happened in Happy Valley?
I think they have bottomed out. I really, that doesn't mean they're going to win these upcoming games, particularly the Wisconsin and the Ohio State game. But I really feel that this has been a tough, I think the Michigan State thing was a very unexpected, difficult thing, and I was in the rain, you know, watching all of that. But I think this debacle against Penn State, I think it leads to some real soul-searching. And I believe it was a quarterback that said that basically the bandwagon is gone. I mean, they're there. It's themselves within the University of Michigan, the players themselves. And they're certainly fans. I've been listening to 1050 some of the time early morning. But some of the fans, I think, are understanding and trying to move forward, and others are not. But I believe the team realizes the Big Ten championship and the national championship, which were certainly goals they felt they had, are gone now. So I can't imagine them bottoming out too much more. These have been two tough things for a proud group of coaches and players and fans to be going through.
Not the month of October that anyone expected, or a lot of people did not expect anyway. In terms of Michigan State, John, seems as if these guys believe now that, hey, if they can just be close in the fourth quarter, they'll figure out a way to get this done. This is four wins in a row and one possession games. How does one win there lead to another?
You know, obviously you build your confidence. I think last year losing some of those close games kind of led to kind of things going every which way. You know, Steele has commented many times that teams that lose close games one year often win those close games the next year. That certainly seems to be the case with Michigan State. I'm probably as amazed of how well this team is doing this year as I was at how badly they did last year. We'll be at Northwestern this week and, you know, kind of seeing what happens there. But clearly, it's an amazingly young team, take that offensive line except for Allen there. It's an amazing thing, a wonderful thing to watch. And those of us that have been fans through thick and thin, as I always say, me and the old Lion fans like Doug Warren have been over the decades, that you can really enjoy and appreciate whatever happens the rest of the year. This has been a very enjoyable, fun season so far, and just obviously the players are building on it, the fans are building on it, the coaches are building on it, administration's building on it, the talk show people are, and we don't have old Feinbaum going after us like he is Harbaugh these days, which I still can't figure that incredible hatred he seems to have for Michigan and for Harbaugh, which since he's in the SEC, but that has been interesting to watch their arguments.
You know, I'm interested in the psychology in Columbus, Ohio this week, guys. Because you have a number two ranked team, undefeated, that coming off a tremendous victory with the Heisman Trophy favorite. And they are a 6.5-point underdog to a once-beaten team, a team that's already lost at home. I wonder how much of this has to do with the payback and the bitterness that Ohio State felt when Penn State won the game last year in Happy Valley after being dominated for 3.5 quarters.
Well, you know, my feeling, I never want to count Ohio State out. I've been for two huge Michigan State victories against them, the Big Ten championship game and then the incredible, if you will, the field goal, the horrible weather down there a few years ago. Hard for me to vote against them. I know that Penn State's an amazing team.
Who has a psychological advantage in this game, John?
I think Ohio State does at two levels. One, because of what happened last year, and then second of all, because the game is there. That's a tough place. Tough place to play. I think at that level, I would say they have the advantage. I think Penn State, this is kind of a, you know, I think they felt they were cheated last year after going to the Big Ten championship game, and they probably, after a close loss in the Rose Bowl, I think they're probably thinking this is a get even for them. But I've been thinking about this. In fact, the young Dr. John and I have been talking about this, and just Ohio State seems to have a couple advantages. That doesn't mean they're going to win, but I do feel psychologically they've got a couple up points. It'll be a fascinating thing to see.
Tom and Terry, do you like the road team?
In this particular Penn State? No, I'm with Dr. John. That home field advantage in Columbus, so I don't think they're going to let this one. You're right. Penn State does have a little payback of getting jobbed last year, I guess, in that decision-making and CFP. But I think Ohio State definitely has a psychological advantage. I mean, they outplayed Penn State, that kick six, whatever, the block punt return. Right. Turn that game, turn the season for Penn State. Who knows what would have happened to Penn State? Because I saw them in Ann Arbor. And they were bad. That was a bad, bad football team in Michigan beat down last year. And they turned it around, which lends hope for a lot of teams.
If these two teams played on a neutral field, I think it would be a toss-up. I really would.
Yeah, okay. So all of a sudden go with a home team.
Yeah, but it just seems like a lot of points, 6.5 points.
Yeah, that is. But I was also thinking that, with Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State, you think U of M might be deciding to become a land-grant university?
Terry, that's a good one.
I had a different way to look at this, John, and I wanted to present this. And, Tom, I know you'll appreciate this. I want to give you my pregame speech as Chris Ash for Rutgers, getting ready for Saturday's game. He just has to tell his team, we've won two in a row without playing well, and we're the State University of New Jersey. Since last November, Michigan's lost to Ohio State, Florida State, Michigan State, Penn State, didn't have to play Bowling Green State, but now it has to play New Jersey State. It shocked the world we did in Piscataway 3 years ago. Just go out and win the game.
What a state of affairs.
Wow. Well, that would amaze me if they won this game. I do feel that Michigan is definitely fired up, and I just feel that this, I would not want to be Rutgers, even Rutgers State University this week. But we'll see. I guess that's why Perlis was always right. That's why you play the games before you look at the ratings and figure who's going to win and lose.
I don't think it'll be 78-0, but I don't think it'll be a close game. I would expect.
No.
What do you think, Tom? Michigan to win this game by four or five touchdowns?
I think they'll win the game. I'll just say they win the game.
Will they win the game enough that Brandon Peters will get in and make all the fans happy?
Irrelevant. Not even worth. Not even. Don't even go. Don't even go to the quarterback discussion. It's not worth talking about. It's not the issue with this football team.
I remember George Perlis on one of the happiest days in John's life saying, "Next up, Rutgers."
Oh, I remember
what
that
happened
too.
That? L.
Yeah.
L. I remember. L.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah, put that on the rings. 0-4-1.
He blew his whistle.
They started
0-4-1. Murray blew his whistle, his coaches, his Duffy whistle.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, John, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it as always.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
Our psychological speaking segment.
Bye-bye.
Brought to you by Regional Psychological Services. We'll be right back with more At Issue on The Drive with Jack.